Hello and welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, your host for the show and founder of the UK charity Yes to Life that advocates for the adoption of integrative medicine for cancer care, an approach that aims to more effectively meet the many needs of those with cancer. Today, I'm going to be speaking to a cancer clinician, Dr. Shireen Kassam. Dr. Kassam is a haematologist who, unusually, is passionately committed to dietary issues and is working to bring changes to our NHS. Shireen, a big welcome to the Yes to Life show.
Oh, thanks, Robin. Great to be back again.
So, for listeners who don't know you, I think we need a little intro. You're here today with two hats. So the first one's your oncology hat. You're a haematologist. Would you explain the important role that you play in cancer care?
Thank you. I work at King's College Hospital as a consultant haematologist. Haematology is quite a broad specialty now. So my areas of expertise are looking after people with lymphoma and also histiocytic disorders. And I also have a role in the laboratory as well.
Right. Okay. Very good. And the second one is as an ardent advocate of plant-based diets. Now, so can you tell us how you came to take up this particular role and the reasons for your passionate endorsement of this particular form of nutrition?
Thank you. So yes, outside of my NHS role, I have founded and run an organisation called Plant-Based Health Professionals UK, and we provide education and advocacy around healthy plant-based diets and lifestyle medicine for improving health, preventing chronic disease, and of course, for the co-benefits for planetary health as well. And I adopted a plant-based diet probably 11 years ago now, and that led me to discover the benefits for all the reasons I just mentioned. And I realised that actually within my NHS role, nobody was really talking about the impact of nutrition on health. We certainly weren't being taught that in medical school or postgraduate education. And I wanted to bring that missing piece to the UK education system. So we started off mainly by providing educational resources and teaching on plant-based nutrition. And this last year, we've expanded our offering to include all pillars of lifestyle medicine. And I'm sure your audience already know a lot about lifestyle medicine, but we can perhaps get into that separately. So yes, that's a little bit about what I do.
Certainly nutrition needs to get into healthcare, that's for sure. So great stuff. Yeah. Okay. So you won't need me to tell you the subject of diets with or without meat ignites some pretty fervent passions. You could even say it's a kind of polarizing issue. So why do you think it is?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And I think our dietary choices do become quite emotional, and we sort of defend our position, don't we? Because it's sort of tied up so much in our culture, our tradition. It's something we all do. It's relevant to all of us, you know, at least or on average 3 times a day. So everyone has a view, which is different from most aspects of medicine. You know, if I talk to somebody about diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, most people wouldn't have a view on the best treatments, would they? So I think that's one of the reasons. And then I think secondly, for reasons that related to sort of corporate interests and finance, the media have done a great job at causing sort of misinformation or disinformation or, supporting that polarization, because it sells stories, it sells newspapers, and it gets us to watch programs. If you create this narrative that actually we don't know what the right way of eating is, and some people might do this, some people might do that, and the media is full of sort of anecdotes that lead people down sort of varying paths. But I mean, just to say, I think, you know, the science and evidence around nutrition and health is really solid, it's really sound, and for decades we've known that a healthy diet is one that's composed predominantly around fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts and seeds, and what you do around the edges comes down to personal choice. So I accept that people may want to consume meat, fish, eggs, and dairy, but that doesn't take away from the foods that are most associated with best health. And I think the other thing we can all agree on is that our consumption of ultra-processed foods is far too high, so we should be minimizing ultra-processed foods as well. And yes, I advocate for a 100% plant-based diet, partly because that has the co-benefits for the planet and the animals we share this planet with. But I fully accept that we can achieve best health with different types of diets as long as they're centered around the foods we know to promote good health.
Right, you're right. The kind of reasonable view doesn't sell newspapers. So it's a shame, isn't it? That's one of the bad aspects of media, is that it actually seeks to polarize things. And yeah, it's a shame. Okay, well, thanks very much for that. So I want to spend the rest of the show talking about some of the initiatives you've been involved in recently, indeed are involved in. You're very proactive in regards to plant-based eating. And the first initiative I'd like to hear more about is the paper that you and two colleagues published recently describing a research project around dietary habits and health outcomes. Now, it's described as a cross-sectional survey. Well, first of all, what does that mean? And then can you tell us about the details of the study, starting with who took part in it?
Yeah, thank you. So this is one of our first bits of sort of original research led by our research assistant, Isabel Sadler, and supported by our statistician, Alex Bauer. And really, it's a survey of our members. So Plant-Based Health Professionals is a membership organisation. We've had members since 2019. And most of our members are interested in, if not fully committed to, consuming a healthy plant-based diet. And they've come to it for different reasons. And so we thought it was a good opportunity to formally survey our members to figure out, well, why is it that they're consuming a plant-based diet? What has it done for them, their health, and is it sustainable? And the other unique aspect of this group is that we're predominantly health professionals. So the survey was over 50% health professionals, which, were, as we know, most health professionals are not terribly interested in a particular sort of nutrition approach, or certainly not plant-based diets. And as you say, cross-sectional just means we did the survey at one time point. So it can't tell you anything about what took place before or what might happen in the future. And so that that has, you know, pros and cons to that sort of methodology. But as you might imagine, that was the sort of easiest way that we could survey our members. And we have around 1,000 members, but for this survey, around 315 people responded to the survey, which isn't bad. The third response rate, yeah, you know what it's like. And as I say, it's half of the participants are health professionals, the other half are just people who are following a plant-based diet. And we divided people into those who describe their diet as vegan, and we know that doesn't necessarily tell you what somebody is eating. It tells you what somebody is not eating. And the other half sort of described themselves as consuming a whole food plant-based diet, meaning they were centering their diet around minimally processed healthy plant foods. And we asked them what they were eating, what their health was like, whether after adopting a plant-based diet they saw any health benefits or detriments, and how long they'd been following this diet and whether they thought it was sustainable. And interestingly, overall, on average, people had been following this way of plant-based eating for around 5 years, with our longest participants out to the 20 years and our oldest participant 82 years old. And so it does show that, you know, for a motivated group of people, this is a sustainable way of eating. Around a third of participants had noted health benefits. The most common one, weight loss, intentional weight loss. And the median BMI in our group was around 22, which you can imagine it is much lower in a sort of a healthier body mass index than the general UK population. And around 15% of people had managed to come off medication. So these were medications that had been previously prescribed for type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol. So it's just a nice sort of review of what we already know, in that when you sort of adopt a diet that's mainly plant-based, you can support a healthier weight, you can manage your cholesterol and blood pressure and glucose regulation much better. And it just shows that we can do it in sort of free living people. They're not people who've had diet prescribed to them. In addition, there were some interesting findings that people had had benefits for conditions such as arthritis and migraine control. And so it opened up some additional areas where the research community might want to conduct some more studies.
I assume that because these are kind of nutrition-interested folks who would take on a thing like this, that you can assume that the consumption of ultra-processed foods was virtually nil. Is that
well,
right?
Well, yes, that's interesting. And the point I should have mentioned, in that we did ask people exactly what they were eating and ask them to report if they were consuming the newer sort of plant-based meat alternatives that are more ultra-processed and, of course, you know, general sort of snack foods and things. And yes, regardless of how people described their diet, you know, vegan or whole food plant-based, there was very minimal consumption of ultra-processed foods, with other indicators suggesting that their diet was of a high quality, with, you know, obviously most people eating more than five portions of fruits and vegetables, and mainly beans and legumes as sources of protein.
I mean, this is one of the issues to do with giving up meat, is they've gone to vast lengths to scientifically produce things that are a bit like meat, haven't they? And I mean, you know, that when it comes to ultra-processed, probably they're some of the worst, aren't they? And they have gone their healthy banner, unfortunately, which is, of course, very misleading.
Well, I think it depends, because it's such a broad category now. There's sort of plant-based meat alternatives. It can be anything from tofu, tempeh,
okay,
to corn products, to your veggie burger, to then things like Beyond Meat, you know, Impossible Burgers, and all the other sort of newer products. So I think it depends. But also, there have been head-to-head studies looking at the newer sort of non-meat alternatives, comparing them to their meat-based counterpart. And actually, there appears to be some benefit over the traditional meat counterpart, which is classified as sort of unprocessed, because these plant-based meat alternatives, regardless of you know, the precise nature of their nutrients, they tend to be higher in fiber and lower in saturated fat. Two of the components that, you know, are an issue in our current diet. So actually, there's benefits for weight management, lowering cholesterol. The main downside of a lot of these products that I hope is addressed by the industry soon is the high levels of salt. But you may get that from, you know, other meat-based products. And people don't take into account that when they cook meat, they tend to add salt, and that's not taken into account necessarily. But yeah, I agree. I don't think there's any need for them. They may have a role for people eating out socially or in restaurants. But I think for me, the downside of these alternatives is that they sort of normalize meat as a source of protein. It's like, well, if we shouldn't be eating meat, then let's find something that's an alternative. To me, it's beans and pulses and tofu and things like that that should be our go-to alternative.
Right. And looking at the kind of, you asked them in detail about what they're eating. So in the range of eating habits, what was there at either end of the spectrum, so to speak?
No, well, as you might imagine, because they're a self-selected, health-motivated group, actually the diets were pretty uniform and met sort of healthy eating guidelines. As I say, everyone was eating a variety of fruits, vegetables, whole grains, beans, nuts and seeds, very little consumption of free sugars, refined grains, and you know, obviously getting their protein sources from things like beans and tofu and pulses. So it was pretty uniform because of the nature. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Well, very interesting.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. we've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavourful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So the next thing I'd like to hear a bit more about is the partnership you created with the International Board of Lifestyle Medicine. What's the plan there?
Yep. So as I mentioned in my intro, so we have expanded our educational offering to encompass all pillars of lifestyle medicine. Nutrition is key, obviously, but we know that physical activity, stress management, restorative sleep, avoiding toxins and maintaining healthy relationships, all part of lifestyle medicine, is so important for promoting health and wellness, both physical and mental health. And most of my team are also qualified in lifestyle medicine, and I and others incorporate this into our everyday practice. And so we had the opportunity, we were approached by the International Board of Lifestyle Medicine, who are the sort of founding organization of the global qualification in the discipline, and whether we would partner with them to administer the exam here in the UK. So that gives the opportunity for UK health professionals and those on mainland Europe to receive the educational offering and sit the examination to gain the formal global certification in the subject. So it's just the first step of starting to incorporate lifestyle medicine into our clinical care, which I know you understand is so key to trying to improve health outcomes, not only for people living with cancer, but, you know, for preventing many of the chronic conditions that people with cancer also have.
Absolutely. Very important. Okay, so this is a training course. So who's eligible, first of all?
Yeah, good question. So it's anyone with a medical doctorate, but also any health professional who's got a master's degree or above qualification. So a range of allied health professionals, as long as you've got a master's degree or above. So it's really trying to sort of capture that postgraduate group of people who are within clinical practice who then want to enhance their skills. And it involves CPD, both sort of self-learning and in-person conferences, of which we've got our conference on Monday, actually. So it'll already have taken place by the time this show is aired. And then sitting an exam on the 29th of November. So we've closed for this year the recruitment, but we will be opening soon for candidates to sign up for 2025.
Right, and so the whole course is how many months?
I think the minimum you can spend on it is 3 months, but most people signed up back in sort of February, March time. So it's a good 6 months sort of study with then culminating in an exam in November. And then going forward, those that have passed will have to show evidence of maintaining their skill set, and that's formally administered by the International Board of Lifestyle Medicine with continued CPD education.
I see. Great, great. Okay, and how much interest is there?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. So obviously, we've all been undertaking this exam already, but we've got about 35 people signed up for our UK offering this time. Okay. And so it's a good start for us. Yeah. And we'll hope to expand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And from what walks of healthcare are these people coming? All or...?
Yeah, well, actually, mostly doctors, but probably around a third, so about 10 to 12 people are sort of dietitians, physios, that sort of professional background.
Well, I hope this makes a distinct dent in the thinking behind healthcare, because it's extremely important. Okay, so the other initiative I want to talk about is a biggie. It's in a kind of war zone. That you're not the first bold adventure to try and make an inroad into the thorny issue of hospital food. Now, most listeners to this show will be aware that good food and restful sleep are two of the pillars of recovery for sick people. So the fact that both are pretty much absent from hospitals doesn't make a lot of sense. So, as part of your campaign for plant-centric eating, you've set up Plants First Healthcare, a campaign to persuade NHS Trust to adopt a plant-based by default meal service. So I see you've already got some big names behind your campaign, Shireen, many top professionals, and also the likes of George Monbiot and Professor Tim Spector. So I want to know more about what you're planning. Firstly, who is Plants First Healthcare?
Yep. Thank you. So our campaign that's called Plant First Healthcare is a combination of a coalition between a number of organisations who are really increasingly concerned around the impacts of our food system, not only on our health, but of course, the health of the planet. And I think the healthcare profession really are extremely concerned on how the climate crisis and the ecological crisis is affecting our health and will affect our health more so in the coming years. We're already seeing the negative effects of extreme weathers, food insecurity, migration, and that's only going to get worse and disrupt healthcare around the world. And the UK is not going to be spared in that respect. And one key aspect of sort of a lower carbon, planet-friendly approach is to shift our diets away from the destructive sort of animal agriculture towards one that prioritizes plant-based foods and meals in all aspects of life. And I think we'll all agree that healthcare and hospitals should be showcasing and role modeling the way that we would like broader society and communities to be eating. So really, that's the foundation of the campaign, to improve health and sustainability of the food being served. And this is nothing new. It's already embedded in the sort of national food guidelines in terms of what food should be served in healthcare. It's just the on-the-ground experience, as you rightly say, is very...
Not quite the same.
Very different. And it's been an uphill battle just for me at King's College Hospital to make any inroads into changing the kind of food provision. You know, you walk into the staff canteen and every morning there's, you know, a full breakfast counter of bacon and sausages, and lunchtime is chips with fried chicken. And you know, I'm told, well, that's what people want to eat and that's what sells. And if when they sort of change it to something healthier, you know, their takings, their income for the day goes down. So it's a really complicated topic. But really, we need to see change. And as I say, we're a coalition of health and climate activists who want to see plant-based meals as the first and foremost offering on menus for those reasons related to health and sustainability. Now, this doesn't mean we're removing anything from menus. It's really around using evidence-based behavioral strategies to support people to make the healthier, the more sustainable choice. So a really gold standard example is that this type of plants first or plant-based meals by default approach has already been implemented in New York City hospitals. So 11 city hospitals started this initiative back in 2019. And now sort of for the last 2 years or more, they have really embraced this approach whereby if you're in hospital, the first and second meal offering to you will be a fully plant-based meal. If you don't want either of those, then you'll be offered other items from the menu. And so you can choose to add animals or dairy or egg to your meal, should you wish. But after 2 years, more than 50% of diners have stuck with that plant-based meal. There's greater than 90% satisfaction, and they've reduced their carbon emissions from food service by 36%. So pretty remarkable results. And this has been a partnership between, obviously, the New York City Borough Office. So the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, is a real proponent of lifestyle medicine and particularly plant-based nutrition, having been able to reverse his own type 2 diabetes and lack of his mother's using a plant-based lifestyle. But also the catering company Sodexo, and they've been working with an organization called Greener by Default. And the reason I mention that is that Greener by Default basically support institutional dining operations to really prioritize plant-based meals. And we're now working with them directly. They've appointed a UK healthcare manager, and there's already one pilot taking place in a staff canteen at the Royal National Orthopaedic Hospital. And what we want, so we're already doing work in the background, but when we launch this campaign on World Food Day on October the 16th, we want to raise awareness that this offering is available, that we're working with Greener by Default. People can team up with them and for free support menu change, designing as canteens, you know, to really prioritize healthier, more sustainable plant-based meals. And we really have got great support for this. So, for example, the UK Health Alliance on Climate Change, that represents more than a million healthcare professional through their membership organizations. And we've got the BDA Sustainable Diets Group, the BDA Renal Group. You know, we've got my professional society, the British Society of Hematology, and you'll see on the website more than 22 organizations, over 1,000 health professionals with, as you rightly state, some real notables on the signatory. So we really want to show that there is a need and desire to change. And then we've got a way that people can put this into action. So individuals within their hospital space, or even, you know, the rural colleges, you know, any catering operation, conferences, we really should be prioritizing plant-based meals as the default option.
Mm, interesting. So kind of there's two aspects, if you like, of food that's being served. There's like, well, what it is, and you've been talking about that. And then there's the other area is the kind of the quality of what's being served. And both are of concern in our NHS. Do you think that your campaign is likely to affect the quality of the food that's served in any way?
Well, we really hope that it will improve quality because it will be promoting a fibre-rich plant-based diet. When we know that in general, public are not consuming enough of fruits and vegetables, only 28% of adults consume five or more portions of fruits and vegetables a day, and the average amount of fibre is 18 grams per day, when we know the minimum we should be aiming for is 30 grams. So we're hoping by prioritising plants on the plate, we will be able to be supporting people to eat a fibre-rich, nutrient-dense diet. And yes, this doesn't take away from the fact that menus will still have to meet the national guidance on nutrition and hydration and meeting nutrient requirements, which we know is entirely possible with a well-planned plant-based diet. So already done in 11 city hospitals in New York, they meet requirements for protein and iron and calcium and all the things that you would expect hospital menus to meet. But that's very regulated, and there's no reason why we can't be continuing to meet those. What this is going to do is support people to make a better choice by prioritizing these items on the menu, by letting them know why they should be choosing them, and by, you know, making sure that the messaging on menus and the way we display them it meets our requirements for health and sustainability.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Delightful news, air travelers. Going in and out of airports without getting sick can be challenging. Time to take charge of the air you breathe with Nasal Guard. Nasal Guard topical gel defends by blocking harmful airborne particles and viruses. Try Nasal Guard for air travelers today. Visit Amazon or nasalguard.co.uk to learn more about Nasal Guard spray and gel products. Again, that's nasalguard.co.uk.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad,
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
It seems like one of the big issues we always hear around NHS food is the kind of budget. I mean, they cost nothing, do they? NHS meals, where it's shocking when you hear how little is spent on them. Given that, as we understand, food is this very important aspect of health, it's, you know, in a hospital, it makes, say, zero sense to allocate so little. Do you think that your campaign might persuade our system to apportion some more budget towards food and make it more important?
Yeah, that's a difficult question. I think there is no slack in the budget in the NHS. You know, sadly, I'm working at a trust that's probably one of the most in debt in the whole country, 80 million, and this is no secret. So I don't think more money is going to be forthcoming. But I think the good news is that one of the statistics I haven't shared with you so far is that in the New York City hospitals, they've saved 59 cents per meal by using this approach. Yeah, it is actually cheaper. And what's relevant to what we've been talking about is this is all whole food, plant-based ingredients. They have not used any of the newer, meat alternatives.
Right.
So just traditional whole food, plant-based meals. And the other thing to mention is that there's been two really useful reports, one from one of the economic offices in the UK and the other from the Conservative Animal Welfare Foundation, modelling different ways of plant-based eating for the UK, specifically with calculations around what would happen if the NHS adopted one plant-based meal a day or all plant-based meals. And both reports are really quite consistent in demonstrating that there would be huge potential financial savings because of partly the slightly lower food costs and the benefit to reaching their environmental goals, and then also potential knock-on effects for improving individual and population health. So I don't think we should be scared away because of any financial risk. I think it's difficult, though, isn't it? Because we all think very short term, and we need to be having more of a longer term approach to this, because, of course, the benefits for overall health and climate are not going to be felt immediately on a year-on-year budget line for the hospitals. So I don't think there needs to be any detriment to people's budgets. But the only other thing to note is that the reason why the food we're serving is potentially cheaper than a higher quality diet in the UK is because of the way the government subsidies work for farming. You know, the government is subsidizing meat and dairy.
Right.
We dedicate 85% of our farmland to raising animals for food, and yet we only use about 15% of our land for horticulture. And we know that at least 2/3 of our fruits and vegetables and beans and so forth need to be imported, and they're not subsidized in any way. So it's really hard for horticulture farming to make a profit. They're not supported by government, and in the supermarkets those foods are not appropriately supported in terms of making them more affordable. So we need a bigger shift in society where government, farming and communities prioritize the food that promote health, and that doesn't require us to be eating a diet of meat and dairy, but that's what we produce essentially.
Interesting how these government initiatives do skew the picture, of course, and we don't particularly notice that. We just go to the shop and pay what it costs. But yeah, they do very much change the picture. All right, so tell me about your ambitions for this project. How do you see change happening? What's your campaign look like? What kind of things have you got in the offing which you hope are going to bring attention to it? And how do you hope that the change might take place?
Yeah, thank you. So as I say, although we're doing work in the background, the campaign formally launches on October the 16th,
right?
Which is World Food Day. We launch alongside a report that I've contributed to from the UK Health Alliance on Climate Change. It's an update to their food policy briefing report, really talking about food system transition away from animal source foods to a plant-based food environment and prioritising plant-based meals in all settings. So I think that's nice to have a policy report and an actionable campaign. We're going to then be sending on this day an open letter to all NHS hospital trusts, to their CEOs, their lead dietitians, sustainability managers, but also to all healthcare organisations, so all the Royal Colleges that support work in healthcare. And we're going to try and get a little bit of a sort of national conversation going on this. But as I say, with an action plan that comes down to making contact with a campaign team, being put in touch with the Greener by Default team, who will then work with all of these institutions who might be interested. And the idea is to obviously get some pilot data for the UK. We've got information now from New York. There's been a pilot in Vancouver General Hospital and probably more as well. But everyone likes UK pilot data. So the idea is to get a group of healthcare institutions, whether they're hospitals or healthcare organisations, to have implemented this way of prioritising plant-based meals, get the pilot case studies out there, and then roll the programme out further. But we're really also hopeful to be able to have some conversations with NHS leaders, and also we would love to speak to the health minister, those in charge of the NHS, to really get a top level support for this initiative. But as you know, it's quite hard, isn't it, with a when there's so many priorities.
You've got to shout loud.
Yeah,
it's very difficult to gain attention for matters, however important they are. So you've got a pilot underway, I think you said, at the Royal Orthopaedic. Is that Stanmore, is that right?
Yes, it is.
And how long's that been running and what's happening there?
Yeah, so probably haven't got any results to share there. We know that it's going on in the staff canteen. I've been aware of it for a few months. So I think we'll have to watch this space for any detail, but it's just been around really deciding the canteen, prioritising the plant-based meals that they've got on offer, and hopefully we'll have some statistics soon to show that people are, through these sort of behavioural initiatives, choosing them, and hopefully they'll have been enjoying them as well. So watch this space. I haven't got much to report there yet.
Fair enough. And there's a lot of activity you just talked about there. So how many of you involved? I mean, you've got this partnership, obviously, with a company which is going to help big time. But, you know, on our team in the UK, how many of you are beavering away at this?
So I guess people working hard in the background, probably about four or five. But we're also formally in a partnership with an organisation called Real Zero, spearheaded by Sue Montgomery, which some of your listeners may have heard about. He's a real, he's a professor in ICU at the University College London, but he's really been involved in the climate movement. So his organisation is working more at a higher level, sort of trying to engage NHS England, Greener NHS, and us as sort of, you know, getting a grassroots approach. And I think together we've got a working group from all aspects of healthcare, from procurement to supply chain to the dietitians, and we're really hoping to have impact through bringing together all the stakeholders within food provision and healthcare.
And do you have any notably high-profile advocates within the NHS who are on your side already, who you think are going to swing things for you?
That's difficult to know whether we've got any key stakeholders. I think the stakeholders are those that, you know, the UK Health Alliance on Climate Change, the organisations, but all of us, of course, work within the NHS. So hopefully we'll be able to bring that to our workplaces as well. We definitely got sustainability managers who've signed our open letter, non-executives and board members of NHS Trust. Probably can't divulge everyone's names without me checking the GDPR on their signatures. But the brief answer is yes, we've definitely got people from a wide range of institutions. And I've already got three meetings lined up with NHS Trust who want to sort of explore this option. So I think the message is getting out there. But with all these campaigns, I think, you know, we'll recognize that nothing's going to change overnight, but it will be something that we'll be working on hard. And as soon as we've got a few pilot sites off the ground with some results, I think we'll be able to get more people interested.
Mm. It's interesting that the sustainability angle is something that probably wasn't part of any previous food campaign within the NHS. There's a relatively recent development, which of course the NHS has to be concerned about like everybody else, more so than most probably. And so that's an added thing, which is an interesting thing, which will bring some weight to the argument.
Well, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, certainly all the organisations that are supporting this campaign are not vehement advocates of a plant-based diet. They never have been. But they're really coming to this through sustainability. The NHS is the first healthcare system in the world to declare a climate emergency, and they committed to reaching net zero emissions by 2040. And unless we address food, we're not going to be able to achieve that. I mean, although food is only contributing 6% of sort of healthcare emissions, that doesn't take into account the co-benefits to, you know, reducing antibiotic use and promoting stewardship there, because we know antibiotics are used in farming. It doesn't take into account the pandemic issues around industrialized factory farming. And it also doesn't take into account the vast amounts of land that could be restored back to nature if we reduced our reliance on animal source food. So I think that's why there's been so much interest, because it's not necessarily the plant-based eaters that are coming on board with this. It's people who are truly, truly and rightly so concerned around climate and ecological health that are spearheading this.
Interesting. I mean, sadly, it means if that's the thing that swings it, it means that the NHS manages to yet again avoid the fact that food's got anything to do with health, which is tragic to say the least. But anyway, it also must be a case of whatever works when it comes to this change. We want to see the change, and so all aspects are important.
Yeah, well, I think that's right. I think the good news is that we don't need to compromise on health. We don't need to make a choice between health and climate. If we design, you know, a good quality, nutrient-sufficient, you know, plant-based menu, we can meet our health goals and our sustainability goals, and you know, impact these wider aspects of health like antibiotic resistance and pandemic risks. So it's a win-win, so which is why we've been able to sort of get support from different areas of society, really.
All right. Well, thank you very much indeed for coming on the show today. Tell us all about these various initiatives. We wish you the very best of luck in improving the nutritional offering of our NHS, of course. Something desperately needs to be done. So thanks very much, Shireen.
Thank you, Robin.
Bye-bye. If you want to read more about the issues we've been discussing, you can look up the Plants First Healthcare campaign at plantsfirsthealthcare.com, plantsfirsthealthcare.com, and also Plant Based Health Professionals UK is at plantbasedhealthprofessionals.com. Some other links will be included with the show information. I want to remind you that it's just a matter of a couple of weeks until the Yes to Life annual conference, which is taking place on the 28th of September in Euston, London. Its title is Pushing the Boundaries, and it will feature leading speakers in the field of integrative medicine, as always, including Patricia Pete, Dr. Penny Kehioglu, Pauline Cobbs, Mark Sean Taylor, Rob Verkirk, Dawn Waldron, Dr. Vijay Murty, Dr. Zoe Lloyd-Wright, and Britt Cordy. You'll go away from the day with a wealth of resources from our expert speakers, as well as from our extensive range of exhibitor stands. It's our flagship annual event, and one not to be missed. Find out more and book your place at yestolifeannualconference.org. Thanks very much for joining me today. I'm hoping you'll be able to listen again next week, and I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.